It's 6 after 10. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today. One of the latest trends in green construction technology is the idea of the green roof. And I am not talking about green shingles or painting your roof green or covering it with green crepe paper or anything else like that. I'm talking about actually growing things, plants, in dirt on the roof. It's a concept that has really taken hold in Europe, and it's spread to this side of the Atlantic as well, and we're going to talk about it today. And specifically, we'll want to find out, what is it? How does it work? What will it accomplish in terms of energy savings? We'll try and get answers for those questions, and I'm sure you'll have dozens more that you'll want to ask as well, and you'll get your chance. My guest this hour is Verlin Klinkerborg, a member of the New York Times editorial board and author of an article in the most recent issue of National Geographic magazine titled Up on the Roof. He joins me by phone this morning. Good morning, Mr. Klinkerborg, and welcome to the program.
Good morning, John. Please call me Verlin.
All righty. I will do that.
Great.
You can call me anything you like, except late for dinner.
I'll think of John over
there. Okay, that'll work.
Great.
Well, let's start by getting an overview of the concept of a green roof or rooftop garden. Exactly what are we talking about?
Well, if you think about it, when we build buildings, what we do is we scrape away the earth, we scrape away the living matter on the earth. We erect the building, and usually on top we put something that resembles asphalt or gravel or something that's impermeable, that heats up tremendously and cools down tremendously. We lose all the natural benefit of the soil and the plants growing upon it. The trend really is to build buildings and replace that natural growth in some sense on the top. And the reasons are many. Probably the most important one is moderating that temperature fluctuation. If you've ever gone up on top of an industrial building in the middle of the summer, in the middle of the day, you know the temperatures up there can be incredibly high, into the 140s. And if you were to go up under the same roof, covered with soil, planted with plants, maybe native plants, maybe plants called sedums, which are low-growing plants, you'd find the temperatures were much, much lower. That has a tremendous benefit in terms of energy saving when it comes to cooling that building. It also reduces what experts call the heat island effect, which is something you experience in the city when all the rooftops heat up. Well, if all the rooftops didn't heat up, perhaps the city itself wouldn't be quite so terribly hot in the summertime.
Where did this idea come from? I mean, where did it originate and who thought it up?
Well, if you think about it, it goes back a long ways. There are folk buildings sheds and barns in Scandinavia that have sod roofs. In the American West, in the Plains states, there were sod roofs early on. Those were just very practical use of local materials. But really, this has been developing in Europe for a good long time now. The oldest still existing green roof is a water treatment plant outside of Zurich that was planted in the 1920s, and which is now home to several species of orchids that have been lost in the wild. In Europe, their idea of building is more durable, more permanent. They're looking at a landscape that they've had to live in for thousands of years, unlike America, where we always feel like there's more room to build. We can always put up a new building. Our buildings are thought of as being not, for the long haul, but for maybe 20 or 30 years. In Europe, the goal is to find a way to make the built environment as natural as possible, to create a continuity between the natural environment of the city and the natural environment of the country.
Well, that really is a huge difference in the culture between Europe and the United States. I mean, they're used to living really close together and not having a lot of space in their cities. I mean, you look at pictures of various cities in Europe, the streets seem a lot narrower than they are here. The buildings are right on top of one another. I mean, the U.S., yeah, it's, we've always manifest destiny. We've always got a new frontier or someplace else to stick something, and we haven't really had to think about that.
Well, we do now. I mean, the energy crisis that we're facing, that imposes upon all of us the duty to think about not just how do we save energy, but how do we actually revise our idea of construction, of dwelling, of habitation, of city planning, so so that we're not only mitigating energy costs themselves, but really opening up a new environment in a certain sense. There's an ongoing sort of split in the green roof community. There are a lot of people who believe that, of course, it's mostly important for its energy savings and the important effect on water runoff, which I'll talk about in a minute. But there's another group that feels that what we're really doing by creating green roofs is creating habitat. The idea of having natural environmental habitat for birds, for insects, for anything, for humans, really, in the middle of a city is a very, very appealing idea. It makes the city more like the country in a certain sense. And it restores the possibility of a kind of life in the city that it has always been banished before. I do want to mention the water runoff, because this is the other really critical function of green roofs. If you go up onto an ordinary non-green roof during a rainstorm, you know what happens. The rain sheets off the sides, runs down the building, goes in torrents down the street, into the drain systems, and where? Back into the river, back into the ocean. I mean, there's the sense that it's just a cataclysmic event taking place. But what happens, and that doesn't happen in nature. When rain falls on parkland, on pasture, in forest, the earth absorbs it and slows down that runoff. By building green roofs, by planning carefully, city planners can do the same thing. They can actually slow down that runoff, which reduces the wear and tear, first of all, on the drain system. It has an important filtering effect so that the water that goes back into, say, the local rivers is cleaner. And it performs a very important environmental effect.
Well, let's talk about some of those environmental effects and the advantages of what you're talking about. But I mean, before we do that, though, one other question. I know that during the energy crisis in the 70s, earth homes suddenly became very popular. They had some problems, though. I mean, for example, there were surround your entire house with the earth tends to push things around a little bit, and there were problems with that technology, and it really didn't catch on all that well. Is this these living roofs, as you talk about in your National Geographic article, is this going to be another environmental fad, or do you think this is something that's here to stay?
No, I think this is really here to stay. First of all, there's a lot of research going into it. It's being studied in universities and cities all across the world, really. There are examples in Singapore, in Japan, especially Germany, Austria, and Switzerland, more and more in the United States, Australia as well. There's a real feeling that this can be got right pretty easily. These are not no-maintenance roofs. They require a little gardening. They require some care. They require a thoughtful consideration of what the local environment is really like. But to me, the advantage of that is that means we're paying more attention to the world we live in and trying to tailor our own needs to that world, as opposed to just slapping on a tar roof, walking away, and saying, okay, we're done now, and that's all that matters. I've looked at a lot of these systems, I mean, in Vancouver, in London, and they're very sophisticated. They not only find ways to separate the building with a membrane from the planted material above it so there's no leaking. They also found ways to actually trap water in dry environments where there could be a slow release of that trapped water into the plants that are growing on the roof to make these as easy to maintain as possible. There's lots of research going on into the plant types, into the kinds of soil mixtures that should be used, into the kinds of substrate, which is the basically the materials that keep the roof from leaking through into the building below. All of that's being explored intensively. And I think that we're still at a stage where every green roof is an experiment of some sorts. But there's a critical mass that's developing now. There are enough green roofs, enough different types, in enough different climates, with enough different planted materials, that we're really getting a sense for the workability of it. I attended an international conference of Green Roof Experts in London in September, and the energy and the dynamism and the number of projects that they all had going was just astounding.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about green roof technology, living roofs, having plants and dirt on top of your building, and that being an advantage for energy conservation, holding runoff stormwater in a better place. And we're going to talk about some of the other advantages. And we'll also ask some questions about this technology and about any potential problems that might crop up. But we also want to hear from you and what kind of questions you have. Do you have experience with this kind of construction? Have you worked with it? Are you thinking about it? What would you like to know? It's very important to us that we hear from you this morning while we have a guest expert with us who can answer some of those questions. 800-486. Let's see. Hang on. 800-486-8655 is the phone number to call. I almost forgot where I was today. 800-486-8655. And you can also send an email. The address is talk@WPR.org. Talk@WPR.org. What about, we talked about stormwater runoff, that these green roofs would hold this water, the soil would hold the water, mm-hmm. the plant material would hold the water, and then it wouldn't prevent all of it from getting into the stormwater sewer systems, because I mean, you know, you might get enough rain to where the ground is saturated, the water's got to go someplace, sure. But what you're saying is it would slow that down.
Yeah,
so Well, I mean, where I'm going with this in my typically rambling question fashion is what happens if we start to put fertilizer and other chemicals into our green roof? That kind of would make that advantage go away. So, I mean, we must have to be very careful with that then.
That's exactly right. And I think everybody who's working on this is trying to think very carefully about this. You do not want to add anything to the soil mix that is essentially going to be a problem as it runs off. This is one of the great tests of green roof technology. It's one thing to say, oh, let's put some plants on the roof and some soil on the roof and let's make it all green and let's slow the runoff and get some energy benefits. The question is, can you do that in a way that is in itself sustainable? That, for example, doesn't use a lot of plastics or uses recycled plastics. Can you find growing media that work really well but are lightweight enough so they don't stress the structure of the building? Can you find growing media that provide the fertility you need? Are there ways to provide the fertility you need without using artificial fertilizers? Because, as everyone in the Midwest knows, nitrogen runoff is a terrible problem. These are all questions that are being explored. They're being developed. What I would say is that this is, you know, my experience with meeting the people who are the real experts who work on green roofs is that they are the greenest of the green, in the sense they're not simply saying the end result is green. They want the means by which they achieve the end result to be green as well, so that every part of it makes a contribution to the overall environmental benefit. But that's a very astute question. In fact, it's one I asked early on the first time I was on a green roof, because I was thinking of that runoff too, and thinking, well, gosh, you know, if you go out and put your tomato plant food on the roof, that's just going to be running off into the water too. So that's a very important consideration.
We need to take a break, and when we come back, as soon as I gave the phone number, the entire phone bank just went nuts. So this is a topic that a lot of people are really interested in, which is always exciting for the talk show host. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll go to some calls and have some questions for our guest, and I'm sure that people are thinking up more questions even as we speak. We're talking about living roofs, green roof technology in this hour. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Hi.
It's 10:21. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about green construction and green rooftops. Larry Mueller, in his next hour, after 11, will be talking about home renovation and repair ideas. His guests are Ken Adams of Madison and John Freiberger of Fitchburg. That's coming up after 11 this morning, Larry Mueller. This hour, we're talking about living roofs, or roofs, I don't know. Let's. We should get a ruling on how that should be pronounced.
Actually, I say it both ways. I'm from the Midwest, too. I know.
That. Okay. All right. Well, yeah, you know, roof is what your dog says, I think. That was my rule. I don't know. It's been a long time since I taught radio announcing. My guest is Verlin Klinkerborg, who is a nonfiction author, has many books published, and he's on the editorial board at the New York Times. And the reason he's on with us this morning is that he has an article in the June edition of National Geographic magazine titled Up on the Roof. And yes, sometime this hour, I will play a portion of that song. I couldn't resist. I always go for the obvious. We are talking about green roof technology, and let's see. Let's take a call from B from Fish Creek first.
Good morning. This is a wonderful topic. I wanted to know if you use this kind of system, what about the snow loads in Wisconsin? We have a lot of snow, and that is a problem. If I know I have to scrape my roof in the winter.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the studies that I've seen have been done in every kind of climate. For example, you can imagine in Germany, Austria, Switzerland, they're dealing with similar kinds of snow loads. And it really depends upon the pitch of the roof. It depends on the kind of planted material you have. I think that probably what engineers do as they sort out what the load of the planted material on the rooftop would be, they also take into consideration the ultimate snow load as well. So they combine the two to make sure the structure is strong enough. That said, there are light enough planting media these days that it's not as if you have to be living in a fortress to have a green roof. Some of the most interesting places I've seen this technology work are in more northern climes. For example, in Alberta, there's a Ducks Unlimited headquarters out on the prairie that is a solid green roof. Again, you can imagine, we're talking about northern Alberta. Snow loads there are going to be tremendous. So I think it's really a matter of consulting with an engineer, consulting with an architect, and making sure that what you're looking at is compatible with what the region's snow loads really are. But I've seen nothing that indicates that it can't be done.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
And thanks for the call. What about, that brings up the topic, what about retrofitting existing buildings for this technology? Is that even possible?
Sure it is, absolutely. In fact, one of the things I'm remembering very vividly an interview I did in Portland, sitting on the rooftop with the city watershed manager, basically, and green roofs manager, looking down at a big county building that was going to be completely retrofitted. It had a black tar surface. It's going to be completely retrofitted with a green roof system. And there's really, I mean, as I say, when you talk about soil and plants on the roof, people just tend to think, well, oh my God, my garden, it's really, you know, we're talking about 6 feet of dirt. No, we're talking about a couple of inches. We're talking about very, very thin layers of soil. We're talking about plants that do well in the naturally harsh environment of a rooftop, that do well with a narrow substrate or a thin substrate like that. There's a way in which talking about this kind of conceals how sophisticated it's really become, because we tend to think, oh, well, sod roofs, we all remember how thick and cumbersome those look in the photographs, but that's not what the new technology looks like at all.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because that was kind of on my mind. How thick is this earth layer? So the kind of plants you're talking about, at least from the reading that I did, and I think that some of this was in your article as well, we're talking about prairie-type plants that, you know, because I would assume that up in that, let's say you're 9 stories up, there's going to be probably a little more breeze than there is down at ground level. So you have a lot of wind. You have direct sun almost all the time. These have to be some pretty specialized plants to survive in that environment.
It's a very different environment up there on the roof than it is down on the ground. And it's harsher. It's drier. As you say, it's much windier. And, there are some plants, like, for example, Ford's Rouge River plant in Michigan, where there's, I've forgotten how many acres it is, but it's like a 5-acre roof. And mostly that's planted with a low succulent plant called sedums, which they do a good job of maintaining, of creating a root surface that holds the soil in place. They perform all the benefits of of a green roof. On the, by the same token, though, I was up on the top of the Vancouver Public Library with a landscape designer named Cornelia Oberlander, and we were looking at a what's now, I think, a 12- or 13-year-old roof that was planted in fescues, blue fescue, a blue fescue called Elijah that you can grow in your own garden. And it looked like a grassland. It looked like a prairie landscape. And the again, it's only growing in a couple of inches of soil, but it looks lush and rich, and it's perfectly adapted to that more hostile climate. There's also really an effort to find a way to use native plants to create a greater mixture of plants, so there's more capacity to create habitat. There's also really, I saw some roofs in London that were fascinating because instead of just having an even surface of soil, they built up mounds of rubble on the rooftop so that the roof surface itself was kind of undulating, which again created more microclimates for habitat on the rooftop.
Let's take a call next from Linda in Bailey's Harbor.
Hi. Near where I live in Sister Bay is a Swedish restaurant, and it's housed in a building that was imported from Sweden and has a grass roof. And in the spring, summer, and fall, they have goats to keep the grass sheared. And it's quite a tourist spot. So it's kind of an interesting phenomena.
Well, that's picking up, as I said earlier, that folk building tradition. I was in Finland in September and saw a number of buildings that had green, had you know, old-fashioned green roofs on them. It's really, it was an adaptable technology then. It's an adaptable technology now. And I do especially love the idea of having goats keeping your rooftop in shape.
36 years old or so, and it's withstanding the age pretty well.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I think if it's built properly, if the loads are taken into consideration, if it's maintained properly, there's nothing to suggest that these rooftops deteriorate substantially over time. I think they require a little more sort of horticultural attendance than a normal roof would, but really, we're all used to replacing our shingles every 15 or 20 years. We're all used to replacing asphalt tar roofs more often than that. So if the roof's properly built and properly maintained, it can actually produce savings in that way, too.
Mm-hmm. Thanks thanks for that call. Appreciate it. And let's go next to Robin in Sheboygan Falls. Robin, good morning.
I have an interesting question because I have a 100-year-old farm-style house, but it has a very high... It has a pitch to its roof. Is there a certain pitch of a roof that would not be acceptable to a green roof?
I think there is. I think you would have to really, again, consult with an engineer or an architect about the slope of your rooftop because there are going to be some, like, A-frame style roofs that are just going to be way too steep to do anything. The most extensive green roofs are on flatter buildings. And in Germany and Austria, there's actually a law that says that if your roof is below a certain pitch that is flatter than a certain angle, you're required by law to put a green roof on it. I do think you would quickly find, though, that at certain angles, just keeping everything in place would be pretty tough.
Yeah, I would think that you'd have a real problem with all the dirt wanting to be in the low end.
Well, that's right, and I think that's just one of the limiting circumstances. I mean, nobody says the green roofs are a suitable technology for every kind of building, but for most roof pitches, they're going to work pretty well, especially in places, for example, where we're talking about industrial buildings in cities where most of the buildings are flat as well. But there's nothing to prevent this technology from changing the way we think about designing our houses in order to accommodate it.
Let's go to Mike in Milwaukee next. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, well, you just answered my question about flat roofs. You're talking about flat roofs. 90% of Milwaukee County is residential, single-family, sloped roofs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, also, so I have a second question I just made up. What about the insurance companies? Do they like these things? I know that they want you to have... They kind of regulate how many roofs you can have on your house and all that. I'm wondering about, is it hard to get insurance?
Boy, I can't even begin to answer that question, but I can think of the fact that in some settings, especially really arid and drought-ridden settings, they might be really beneficial because what's the first thing people do when a forest fire approaches? They go out and water their rooftops. Here you've got a sort of built-in fire prevention system. But again, I don't want to leave you with the impression that any pitched roof is unsuitable. If you think about most conventional American suburban, say ranch-style houses, those are fairly low-pitched roofs, and in many, if not most cases, they would be pretty suitable. Now you get into the older Victorians where the roof pitches are a little bit steeper. It's a little different. But again, this is one of those things where I think if you're really interested in this technology, it's worth doing a little research on the web, making a few phone calls. Finding out, you know, what the real limitations are.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you Google green roof, you will get just zillions of hits, and a lot of them will be for companies that specialize in this technology, and there's certainly a lot of information out there. I'm certain that because it's the Internet, some of it is bad information, so you have to do a little filtering, but there's certainly a ton of interest in this and a lot of info that's available.
Well, and some of the websites are really quite spectacular. There are some that maintain really an ongoing index of green roof projects around the world so that you can actually look at the very different kinds of construction that have been used in all sorts of different places. And it's really staggering the first time you wander into this world to see how advanced it's become, to see how widespread it is, to see how much conviction there really is about its benefits and its suitability as a technology.
Let's see. We've got more callers. And by the way, there are some lines that have opened up. So if you were waiting to get in, now would be a great time to call 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. That's the toll-free number. You can also send us an email. The email address is talk@WPR.org. Harvey in Racine is next. Harvey, good morning.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm part of the planning committee for a new Village Hall police complex for something like $13 million, and we're looking at green options. And I've sort of three pieces of a question. The additional cost of a green roof per square foot, give or take, the payback time for it, and the life expectancy. And I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
Well, that's a great question. And you're going to get very different kinds of answers for it, depending on the climate you're in, the engineers you work with, all that sort of stuff. Let me try to give some, and these are very, very rough ballpark figures. The initial cost is going to be at least, I would say, about 30% higher. It depends on the nature of the system you're putting in. The payback time is actually quicker than you would expect because it, depending on the tax structure and the tax incentives that surround you, you can, first of all, you're saving money on energy because the heating and cooling costs are substantially less for a building that has the insulating properties of a green roof on top of it. It may be, for example, that like the city of Portland, which is a terrific example, there are already tax incentives in place that will help encourage you to put a green roof on. The other thing that I would really look into is one of the ways that Germany and Austria deal with this. They actually look at the amount of impermeable, that is to say, surfaces that force water to run off quickly. How much impermeable surface are you building onto a roof? And they actually require you to pay a fee based on the amount of impermeable surface. So if instead you build a permeable roof, in other words, a green roof, one that slows down runoff, you actually, again, find that you're freed from certain kinds of fees. So it's really worth examining all the sort of all the tax structures, all the incentive structures, all the initiatives that are going on in your community as a way of offsetting some of that initial cost. Once the roof is on, if it's properly designed, maintenance is, as I said, a little more complicated at first, especially getting it established. It requires a different way of thinking. You don't just slap it on and walk away. You now have a living engagement with this living roof because it's producing living benefits to the community around you. And does take a little effort to keep up. But there is absolutely, in my estimation, and according to the experts that I've talked to, the likelihood is that it will have a longer life than almost any conventional kind of roof you can put on.
We have an email from Justin in La Crosse who asks, how do you keep the building under the roof from rotting? Also, does the soil wash off the roof and run down the side of the building?
Well, now the way to think about this is, first of all, there are several layers of membranes, very different kinds of membranes, between the roof itself and the building underneath it. So there is no water coming in contact with the building underneath it to rot it. That just doesn't happen if the roof is properly built and properly maintained. And rather than thinking of it as just a single, imagine that you have, a flat garage roof or a slightly angled garage roof, like a shed roof on a garage with a relatively low pitch. Instead of thinking of it as a single sheet of soil that would then start to run off and slump towards the low end, think of it more as a garden where you have small raised beds, each one maybe, say, 2 or 3 feet square or 4 or 5 feet square. Each one is a self-contained unit. Well, that's exactly what happens in a green roof, except sometimes they're using sort of plastic cell structures underneath it to keep the soil contained in its individual compartments. This is, again, one of those things you kind of have to work through the language a little bit, because green roof, planted surface, we think of just a single lawn on top of the roof with a single sheet of soil. It's better to think of it as a sort of, if you imagine a kind of honeycomb structure filled with, a honeycomb structure of cells filled with soil, each one of which has been planted, then you get a clearer picture for the integrity and the coherence of the roof itself.
Thanks for that email, Justin. Let's take another call. This time it'll be Deborah in Madison.
I am just calling, and perhaps someone who's listening knows more specifics. This last year there was an award given, a grant, to two graduate students from the engineering department, I believe, at UW in Madison. And it was, they came up with a plan to put hydroponic gardens on the flat roof, the big box stores, especially starting with the giant grocery stores, so that the produce you bought downstairs was being grown on the roof upstairs, and hydroponics not needing the load bearing capacity to carry all that soil, and they're not floating in water. It's just so you're just supporting the plants and the plumbing that brings the tubes of water to them. You end up with this, brilliantly efficient. I thought of the gazillions of square miles of flat box stores that we've got, big box stores all over the state or country. If they all turned into hydroponic gardens, we wouldn't even need farms hardly anymore. So I don't know if anyone listening has more details, but they're trying to start a company now.
Well, it's a great idea, and there are examples of rooftop gardens that are providing produce for restaurants underneath them. There are examples of green walls as well, where there's a kind of vertical gardening for plants that want to grow in a vine-like way, like tomatoes. But your essential point is really critical, because you think about all this wasted negative space on top of all the flat buildings, industrial buildings, big box stores in this country. It's thousands and thousands and thousands of acres, and it's just sitting there generating heat, generating dust. I mean, it's doing nothing. And the idea that we can take that space and, first of all, make it more productive, make it more benign, make it part of nature's habitat instead of being this sterile, awful kind of surface, to me there's a beautiful logic in that. And I would think that for, places like Costco and Walmart, for the big box stores themselves, there would be a natural incentive to want to think this way, because it's a sign of their commitment to change, a sign of their commitment to the community, a sign of their commitment to the interpenetration of suburbs and city and the rural countryside itself.
We have another email, this one from Jim in Black River Falls, who writes, how can I retrofit my existing timber-framed roof to a green roof? I have 4/12 pitches with some 6/12 pitches.
Well, that again, I hate to give an answer that sounds like I'm bailing out, but I'm no engineer and I'm certainly no architect. The best thing to do would be to do a little research on the web, look for somebody in the local region, and I'm sure you'll be able to find someone. And pose that question directly to them, because they'll be able to give you realistic answers of a kind that I could only begin to guess at, and I'd hate to mislead you in any way.
Well, one thing that seems obvious about these green roofs is that they would be taking carbon dioxide out of the air and putting oxygen back in, which is always a good thing, right?
Absolutely. Any addition we can make to the planted surface of this earth is a good thing. And really what it does is it just replaces the ground we've lost when we put up the building itself. The benefits go on and on and on. I met scientists who were studying spider populations and bee populations and bird populations on green roofs in Europe. And there really is a way in which, as these roofs begin to grow in number, it's almost like you're creating a rooftop green belt through the city.
Let's take a call from Michael in Washburn next. Good morning, Michael. How are you today?
Good morning. Fine, thank you. I'm retired now, but for about a half a dozen years of my contracting career, I imported log cabins that were custom made in Norway and brought to the United States. We built a lot of them around Bayfield, Washburn area, northern Bayfield County. And I had the opportunity to go to Norway and observe not only the process of lofting, as they call this, but also houses and cabins that were there that have had sod roofs. In fact, I witnessed one sod roof being torn off that was 200 years old, and the only membrane was birch bark.
That's amazing.
But the log cabin structure lends itself very nicely to this. And in answer to some of the questions that you've been having, our ideal pitch for a sod roof was 26 degrees, which is about a 5.5 to 12 pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And snow load calculation in Bayfield County, which is fairly snowy up here, is 165 pounds per square foot, which is not that much, and that's kind of overkill.
Mm-hmm.
And we obviously never have had any insurance issues with it as long as it's engineered correctly. But one of the ways that we get the soil up there, amongst many, is to put the soil in burlap bags and seed it. Mm-hmm. And that holds the soil very tightly. And you do want some drainage in along the eave. Near the gutter, we have pebble rock that collects the water, so you do want movement through there. And we use clay soils up here because they hold water much longer.
Mm-hmm. That's a very helpful answer. I mean, and they sound like they're beautiful buildings as well. And it's one of these interesting technologies in the sense that it's coming from, on one hand, a traditional background, long usage, old practices. At the same time, it's being reinvented in a very high-tech way. For more extensive roofs, for larger kinds of plantings, it's as if two technologies are beginning to converge in a certain sense.
Yes, and I'm glad to see this this technology going forward. And I realize that it's not going to be appropriate in the way they built Scandinavia here necessarily,
right.
But we're ingenious that way and can figure it all out.
Well, and that gets back to a really important thing, and one of the things that. One of the real experts I talked to, a man named Stefan Bruneisen, who is Swiss, kept saying it's important that these green roofs be local roofs. In other words, they are totally tailored to local conditions, local plants, local climates, and there is no single industrial solution that suits every building. It's much better if they're responsive in that local way.
We have a call next. Seth in Duluth is with us. Seth.
Hi, how are you? So I acquired a building about 4 or 5 years ago from the city of Duluth, right across the city hall, and looked into putting a green roof on the top and ran into a couple of weight issues, so we weren't able to go with a full green roof. But what we did do is that we went with planters and sections of the roof that became green roofs. And right now, the building is a condo building, and so we've got residents there, and we've got trees growing up on the roof, and my comment is how much we enjoy it. And we garden up there, and there are so many buildings that their roofs are underutilized, and I'll take my comments off.
Well, that's you've made two really wonderful points there. The first is that if the roof doesn't, you know, can't be adapted to a full green roof, you can do it in a kind of containerized way, planters and individual pods of plants that maybe only take up part of the green roof. But the other wonderful point, too, is that when I talk about green roofs as habitat, I don't just mean for birds and spiders and bees and ants. I mean for humans, too. What if the rooftops of a city were more habitable? What if each rooftop was park-like or garden-like in some sense? How would our relationship not only with the rooftop itself change, but with the rest of the city? I think, you know, where this has been explored, people are always finding that green roofs are actually an amenity as well as an environmental benefit.
We need to take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk some more about green roof technology and how it can be implemented with our guest and with you. We still have a bunch of callers on the line. We'll try and get to as many of those calls as we can. Still a line or two available for you at 800-486-8655. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 1049. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today. Here's what's coming up later on today on the Ideas Network. At issue with Ben Marins, June is the unofficial national wedding month. But the divorce rate in the United States is nearly 50%, and many couples today are together but unhappy. After 5 on At Issue, Ben Marins and his guest examine what it takes to have a healthy, happy marriage. That's coming up later today. And, of course, next hour, as I mentioned earlier, the construction theme continues. Larry Mueller will have guests on talking about home renovation and repair issues. And maybe some of you who have some questions about the green technology will want to hang on and call in on Larry's program and maybe get some answers to some of those. Where are we going next? Well, first of all, let me reintroduce my guest. We're talking this morning with Verlin Klinkerborg, a member of the New York Times editorial board and author of an interesting article in the current issue of National Geographic magazine titled Up on the Roof. Let's go next to Pete in La Crosse.
Good morning, John. Hey, Verlin, I guess it was?
Yes, that's right.
I wanted to talk about the R-value of the soil on the roof. Apart from any benefits of thermal mass or evaporative cooling, most of the engineering handbooks list the R-value of dirt as either negligible, or one source I found listed it as 1.2 per foot. Mm-hmm. So the readers want to keep that in mind as if they were considering the insulation value of a green roof. So they're not doing it for the insulation value, because the 1.2 per foot is actually the same as a quarter of an inch of polystyrene foam insulation. But all the other benefits that you talk about are, in fact, just as you state, it's just the R value of dirt is unfortunately dirt.
And I think it's important. I mean, that's a great distinction to make. We tend to think of it as being just about insulation in some ways. But, in my experience of these rooftops, it has more to do with evaporative cooling, with the kinds of moderating effects it has on the roof surface itself. To go up, I mean, I've been on rooftops in Vancouver where on a hot day, it felt like you were standing in a park practically. It's a wonderful change. But thank you for that clarification.
Sure.
Thanks for the call, Pete. Mike in Appleton, you're next. Hi, Mike.
Yeah. Just some thoughts. A fascinating program and very interesting. However, I can see this designed more towards commercial buildings who, one, have flat roofs and probably are more structurally sound to take the weight of what is involved in this sort of technology. But probably the vast majority of construction in the United States is single-family homes or duplexes or apartments. And they're, the weight consideration is important. These roofs are probably primarily slanted. And as your guest says, this requires some maintenance. So if we're looking for an impact, why not consider something that I mentioned years ago on one of these programs, is changing the colors of the roofs. Let's try to get some reflective value. Let's paint them white or something of that nature.
Well, or put solar panels on them. There are lots of other alternatives. There's lots of ways to make your roof beneficial without necessarily going to a green roof. But one of the things I'd like to say, though, is that it's true that as we look back at the older construction, the construction that's already in existence around us, it has a certain shape, a certain style. It will tolerate certain loads. But more and more and more in the building environment in this country, there is an effort to think proactively in a green way. In other words, what if we design a building differently so that it accommodates these loads and perhaps has a roof pitch that is better suited to green roof, if green roof is the best technology here. In other words, rather than bringing forward the paradigm we've always worked with, the housing models we've always worked with, which we've, you know, they've been cheap and they've been effective up to a point, but I don't think anyone would argue that they were very well thought out in terms of heating and cooling costs or environmental benefit or easing their environmental impact in some ways. As we change the way we think about how we build, I think it's going to become easier and easier and easier to imagine ourselves in a world where green roofs are just as suitable for residential housing, whether it's apartments or duplexes or single-family homes, as it is for flat industrial buildings.
Well, culturally, we've just gotten kind of used to hitting the easy button. I mean, we've done what the simplest and cheapest way to keep the rain out of the house, and that's pretty much been the standard. But we really can't keep doing that, can we?
No, that's right. And you know, this goes back to your earlier example about earth homes in the 60s and 70s. Well, that was a newish technology that was just getting developed in some ways, and there were as you said, there were issues with the membranes between the earth and the rest of the house itself, but you know, you go back and look at those earth houses, and in terms of energy efficiency, they were unmatched. They produced astonishing results. So I think that, you know, it's really just a matter of asking ourselves, how do we want to live? What are our values? What do we choose to pay attention to first and foremost? And if it's just cheap and easy and reproducible and not very, we don't need to worry about knocking it down in 20 years, well, that's one thing, but I really don't think we can afford to do that anymore.
Here's an email from Bill in Madison. There are many native plants here in Wisconsin that have roots that go down several feet. Do plants on low-pitched green roofs on which soil is placed but rarely ever placed beyond, say, 6 inches, maybe a few more, suffer because they can't grow as well as they could?
Well, it's a matter you have to choose the plants that suit the medium. You can't take a deep tap-rooted prairie plant, and there are some phenomenal plants from the native prairie that have, I mean, they have root systems that are just staggering in their depth and complexity. Those are clearly not going to be suitable for green roofs. It's really a matter of going through the network of local plants, looking at their climate growing conditions, looking at their root structures, thinking about the way they tolerate aridity of the rooftop surface, the winds, all that sort of stuff. It's really selecting a vocabulary for the rooftop, just the way you select a vocabulary of native plants for your garden.
Yeah, I would think, I think Creepin' Charlie would probably grow up on the roof. It grows everywhere else in my yard.
Yeah, well, let me think about green roofs for a second. It's very funny because, you know, at least I live in the Northeast. I live on a small farm way north of New York City. And I had a new roof put on one part of my house and about 10 years ago, and I'll tell you what now, that's a green roof. There's moss growing all over it. I mean, it's as if the roofs want to be green in some sense.
Well, things will find a place to live. I mean, you look at, you know, sheer cliff sides, and here's a tree growing out of it. And you think, well, how in the world did that get there?
Right.
So if it's a flat surface, something's going to colonize it. Well, what needs to happen to encourage this kind of construction concept?
Well, there's a couple of things. One is already what you're doing here, which is, you know, getting the idea out, letting people hear about it, letting people talk about it and ask their questions. I think that it has to be cities and towns have to look at it as a suitable, successful technology, because that's what it is these days. They have to look carefully at tax codes, at incentives. They have to look at ways in which we can help people make the right choice environmentally. And that's what's happened all across. One of the reasons we think of Europe as being so successful in terms of green technologies is because they understand the green technologies, they're not just economic, they're not just technological, they are social and cultural in nature. In other words, as the idea spreads, As we make room for incentives that will help the idea spread, it will spread even faster. The more it spreads, the better it's tested, the more success we have. We address the failures. It just begins to move. What's really required, though, is that we start to think in a slightly different way. Instead of asking nature to adapt to us, we start to think about how can we adapt the way we build to nature.
And that seems like a good place to leave our discussion. Verlin Klinkerberg, thank you so much for being with us today.
It's a pleasure.
Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thanks to all the people who asked questions. They were great questions.
Oh, we have a great audience here at Wisconsin Public Radio. Rhonda Fanning produced this program and handled on-air production for it. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. Larry Mueller is next. Stay tuned. It's the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.